All right, welcome in Disaster Zone. Shane's not even here, and I can't get on time. I don't even know if this is the right one. Wait, no, I think this is the right feed. What the hell's going on? Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC, you know, the name of the damn show. Let me know if you can hear me. Let me know if you can see me. Shane's still on vacation, so just solo here, but I got a really good interview with our good friend Clark Brooks, SEC Stat Cat. He's been on the show a couple times before, and we had a lot of fun. So I'm just going to give you some news items around the SEC, and then we're going to call it, and then I'll upload. It's already uploaded. I just got to publish the SEC Stat Cat. So still getting a normal length show. It's just kind of two links, if that makes sense. I don't even know if anybody can see this. Or anybody can hear this, but I don't know what is going on. All right, now I'm having to do this from my phone. I can see the comments on the phone, but I cannot see them on the computer. So this is going great. But hey, shout out, Cousin JR. I am able to see you gifted 5 memberships. What a legend. What a damn legend that man is. He shows up. Think about it. Cousin JR shows up more for this show than damn Cousin Shane. But shout out Cousin Shane down in Orlando. Let's see who got memberships. Thanks to Cousin JR, Cousin Mike, Larby, Brian Gates, Brock Schaefer, Ben Kerr, Justice Served. You've all been served memberships. Thanks to the legend JR. Hell yeah. That's awesome. So again, I'm going to try to respond to as many comments as I can, but for some reason I can't see him on the computer. We got to get this fixed. This is too many of you show up for all these technical issues day in and day out. So I do apologize for that. I don't really know what to say other than I'm not the one. But hey, on with the show. Last opportunity for anybody interested to check out our friends over at MyBookie. MyBookie, the online sports book, of course. Promo code THATSEC. Super Bowl Sunday coming up. Kansas City is only a 1-point favorite over the Philadelphia Eagles. So should be a hell of a game. I can't recall a time when the point spread for a damn Super Bowl was only 1 point or damn near a pick 'em, but that's where we're at. So this should be a good time. So if you haven't already, you want to wager on the Super Bowl, head on over to mybookie.ag. That's the website. Promo code THATSEC. They'll take care of you over at MyBookie. All right. So how about this? This is wild. This is wild. I know we got some dogs in here, but have you guys heard? Because this is totally new to me. I don't know when this came about. I don't think it's officially a state law in Georgia, but it's soon to be something called the Kirby Smart Bill. Because Georgia didn't win a national championship 2 years in a row. We got to change the damn rules to college football. I'm kidding. Not the rules for college football, but the rules in the state of Georgia are in the works to be amended to be on a more competitive scale thanks to this Kirby Smart Bill. So if you haven't heard about this, this is amazing. This is the epitome of SEC football right here. Shout out to the Georgia Senate. They are currently in the works of making a new law that says Georgia athletes will not have to pay any taxes on NIL payments they receive. So it's a break for guys, particularly in the high end, if you're making $1 million plus. The more money you make, essentially, the more this would help you. So this is only going to help high-end football, basketball, I would think. I mean, I don't think, maybe baseball. I don't think baseball guys get that much money. But again, shout out Georgia. You don't win the national championship 2 years in a row. And according to this bill, or the people sponsoring it, down in Georgia, they have taken notice that the state of Texas, the state of Tennessee, I believe the state of Florida too, there's no income tax, no state income tax. So this NIL bill, which again is literally, I think it's called the Kirby Smart Bill, is what it's being called down there, is amazing. Athletes will not have to pay for their income tax for NIL money. So I just think that's hilarious, but it's smart too, because these are the programs you're competing against: Texas A&M, Tennessee, Florida. maybe not Tennessee and Florida so much on the field, but in the realm of NIL, you are competing with these programs. So that's what's at stake with this Kirby Smart bill. Again, it's not officially law yet. We know Missouri has changed their state laws to help Missouri get student athletes paid, I think even before they get to campus. So, you know, we applaud Missouri for doing that. I'm going to applaud Georgia for doing this too, because in the end, it's players that are making high income to not get taxed as much. And there's still such a thing as a Kirby Smart discount, which we'll get to in just a second. But this is, you know, when you have $1 million or more on the table, and we're talking, I mean, I shouldn't, but I can't do taxes. I have people do it for me. But, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars potentially that this could save high-end prospects. And, you know, here's one that I don't know that it was, we can't say it was all money, but he's kind of saying it himself. So Justice Terry, 5-star, that Texas landed. A lot of people thought he was going to go to Georgia. And I believe he's from Georgia. And according to Chad Simmons, does a hell of a job for On3. Why Texas over Georgia, the home? I mean, most kids, I would think, in Georgia grow up wanting to be Bulldogs. Well, according to Justice Terry, I got the image up here. I don't know how else to say it, but straight up a better NIL package. So there's your evidence right there. If there's any Georgia senators, state senators, or what have you, that don't want to pass this Kirby Smart bill, I'd pull up that tweet right there and say, hey, we're getting outbid by Texas. And they're potentially our biggest threat now in the SEC. We just played them in the SEC championship game. You enjoyed beating them, didn't you? Well, you're going to have to pass this bill. So I just think that is hilarious. But again, that is SEC football recruiting at its finest. And then some more about these classes. This was a really interesting article. I recommend everybody go check it out. Pete Dankos. I don't think we've ever actually had him on the show, but I've had discussions with him. We're going to try to get him in at some point. But he did a whole article over at On3 on NIL collectives and talked to people anonymously so they would give him accurate information. And some of this stuff is fascinating. So one of the big questions in that article, who paid the most? Now that Wednesday was National Signing Day, these things are popping up. Who paid the most for their signing class this cycle? The number one team referenced? Texas. So, hey, it's all legal. There's nothing wrong with this. But that was the name that came up the most. Texas A&M was often referenced as well. Texas and Texas A&M, you know, it's going to be a bidding war down there as long as, you know, those two fan bases are trying to reach and win a national championship. And how about this? Tennessee was the third most mentioned SEC program in terms of NIL spending on the. This fourth one may surprise you, but it probably shouldn't based on how well they did in recruiting. But the fourth one was Auburn. So, again, and these are not, I don't think, like exact figures or anything like that. But, oh, holy smokes, speaking of figures, we just got 10 memberships gifted. Whoa, shout out. Horton hears you. I hope you can hear me. I don't know that you can hear or see any of this. But shout out. Ooh, people can give gifts now too. Huh? Sorry. Shout out Michael Jensen, Will Dewey, ETV, Marcus Roberts, Lemu Jones, Rusty Bridges, Matthew J, Cam Cam, Brodo Baggins, Brodo, what up? And Peabody, aka P Dash. You've all been gifted memberships thanks to Horton. Hears you, which I don't even know if he can hear me, but that is very generous of you. We appreciate you, brother, but man, 15 memberships gifted. We're going to have to do something nice for these folks that keep doing all this stuff. You know, that's amazing. Maybe all these people live in Georgia, and now with this Kirby Smart bill, not having to pay state income taxes, they got extra money to throw around, so they're giving out memberships. That's the only thing I can think, but it's pretty surprising, wouldn't it, if Auburn had the fourth highest recruiting budget via NIL in the SEC. It's believable, though, because they signed a top class despite lackluster results on the field, to put it kindly. But then three other schools were mentioned outside of the SEC: Ohio State, Oregon, and Nebraska. So the usual suspects. One thing that was very evident expressed in the article, too, which I thought was interesting, Georgia still gets that Kirby Smart discount, to where maybe that's why you're not hearing their name among the top spenders in NIL, because they still don't have to. And they to still get an elite class, players want to go play for Kirby Smart because they know they're going to compete and play for championships. And most importantly, they're going to get to the NFL. There's no one in college football right now that can sell that better than Kirby Smart. It was Nick Saban. Now it's Kirby. And quite frankly, Kirby's been able to do that for quite a while there. So that's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. And then I thought this was wild too. Who's the highest paid player in the class? Of course, three out of the four people asked said Bryce Underwood, the quarterback that flipped from LSU to Michigan. But one person said Tennessee's offensive tackle, David Sanders. So this gives you an indication of what that guy's making there at Tennessee. And again, there are no figures here, but if David Sanders is paid more than Bryce Underwood, that would be a stunning revelation. I don't think it's accurate, but he may be the number two most highest paid recruit in the country. That probably is accurate. And then the only other thing I want to share, go read the article, Pete Nankos on Three. Read it for yourself. It's really good. It's all kinds of nuggets in it. But he asked around, what's it going to cost to get a quarterback year one? And the average response was $1.5 to $2 million for a first-year quarterback, $2 million. That would have seemed ridiculous a couple years ago, but that's what it is now. That's what it is. Hey, shout out Cousin Rick. I see Cousin Rick. Hopefully you're feeling better, buddy.
Thanks, cuz.
Rick says, miss signing day. Hope every SEC cousin filled their wish list. Love the show. Gig him. Bait the hell out of Mizzou in basketball. So appreciate you, Cousin Rick. Hope you're doing well, my friend. And then, hey, how about this? Did you guys see this? The SEC announced just today that they have given out $808 million. Right? All these people that get mad about the players getting paid, I don't hear them crying for the SEC just handed out $808 million to their institutions for the fiscal year. And the 14 schools that were in the SEC for the full year, they got $52.5 million. This money is through TV revenue and for making the bowl games postseason play. That's what that's an NCAA tournament, things of that nature. So $52.5 million. To the 14 members that were in the conference all year, Oklahoma and Texas, they get $27.5 million. And it's only that number because Oklahoma and Texas officially joined the SEC July 1st. So moving forward, Oklahoma and Texas get a complete equal share along with the rest of the SEC. And this $808 million does not count a raise that the SEC got for the ESPN contract. Remember in the fall, all the games were on ABC or ESPN. So that technically they're getting that money already, but that won't count till the next fiscal year. So these numbers are going to skyrocket even more, probably closer to $70 million per SEC school. So Texas chick, what a comment. $808 million, but can't afford replay systems. Worth a crap. Exactly. What the hell are we doing with all this money? What are we doing sitting on this damn money? Jack Burton says, Mike, hand me that Aggie towel back here. I need to use the bathroom. All right. Hey, one other thing. I mean, hell, we're a basketball show now. I mean, not really, but we are having fun covering it. Basketball, there was some great action yesterday. Shout out Tennessee for taking down Missouri. I wanted to share the latest ESPN bracketology from old Joe Lunardi over here, because man, the SEC is kicking ass in college basketball. We're far and away the best conference this season. Here's your latest evidence. It is already February, and according to Joe Lunardi, ESPN Bracketology, SEC would have three number one seeds, three of the top four seeds in the projected NCAA tournament. Auburn, number one overall. Alabama, number two overall. Tennessee, number four overall. That would be amazing. Again, we still got, five, 6 weeks, what have you, of regular season. But this, you know, we're getting close to the end here, and the SEC is still dominating. Number two seeds in the field. We got Florida as the sixth seed, A&M as the eight. So those teams, both of them, could work their way potentially up to a one seed. Just got, you know, they have to knock out a team or two in front of them. We have a number four seed, Kentucky, 15th overall, with Ole Miss just outside at number 20, according to Bracketology here. Last four buys, we got Georgia still in the field. Last four in, we got Vanderbilt still in the field. And oh, buddy, look there. Next, first four out, we got them Arkansas Razorbacks rising the charts. John Calipari going to be doing his magic once again, where his team kind of sucks, and then they catch fire at the tail end of the season. I mean, Arkansas has won back-to-back road games at Kentucky, and then last night at Texas. John Calipari is doing the horns down on TV. It was a thing of beauty. But could Arkansas work their way into the NCAA tournament? Right now, the SEC's got 13 teams, according to Joe Lunardi, projected to make the NCAA tournament. So could they get 14? Probably couldn't get 14, but maybe Arkansas can knock someone else out. That would be a thing of beauty, if you ask me. And then here's what we got Saturday's action. I mean, look at this damn slate. If you ain't watching college basketball, it may be time for you to get into it. We got number six Florida at number one Auburn. We got number 10 A&M at number 15 Mizzou. Number three Alabama at Arkansas. That'll be a huge, huge opportunity for them Razorbacks to make their case that they deserve to be in the NCAA field. So all of a sudden, that game's got major implications. Night game there in Fayetteville. Number four, Tennessee at Oklahoma. Oklahoma, that could be a signature win for them if they can knock off Tennessee. South Carolina at number 14, Kentucky. Number 22, Mississippi State on the road at Georgia. Both those teams, you know, that'll be a big game for seeding and for Georgia to stay in the field. Number 25, Ole Miss at LSU, and Texas at Vanderbilt. Man, getting fired up. I'm getting fired up. Not as fired up as I would for football, but this is highly entertaining, and this is giving us something to talk about, something to hang out with here as we get into, this is the worst time right now for college football, but we got spring football right around the corner. Even though it sounds like Texas is not going to do a spring game now, this is catching on. Damn, Nebraska started a domino effect. It's not official yet, but Steve Sarkisian reportedly, does not want to do a spring game. All I remember is Arch Manning lighting it up and starting the Arch hype down there for last spring game. Why would we want to take that away? Don't take it away from us, Sark. Come on, we don't have much. We need these games, not really, but I do enjoy watching them. As do the fans, and fans like going to them. So I hope they don't do away with spring games. I think they are getting closer and closer to doing it. But they like that $808 million check, and the SEC network requires them to play something. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. But, hey, that's pretty much all I got on this episode of the show. I told you it would be a short one. But I'm about to publish an interview with our good friend SEC StatCat, so stay tuned for that. A really good interview where we talk about impact transfers across the SEC, some of the bigger quarterbacks, you know, like would you rather have Jackson Arnold or John Mateer? Would you rather have DJ Lagway or Lenore Sellers? Who's a better coach, Shane Beamer, Eli Drinkwitz? Who's a better coach, Lane Kiffin or Brian Kelly? These are the things we talked about with our friend Clark Brooks, SEC StatCat. So, like I said, apologies for the technical difficulties. I hate doing these shows solo. I think you guys hate listening to them. We all hate it when Cousin Shane ate here, especially me. But I do appreciate hanging out with you guys. And I hope you appreciate that, you know, we show up and try to give you guys the latest, greatest. And yeah, that's all I got. So, hey, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Cousin Shane will be back before you know it. We got some great ideas. You know, he's at an alligator farm right now. Can't make that up. He is literally at an alligator farm filming content that he's going to put on the channel. So stay tuned for that. I think he's making a video of going to Disney, which I think that entails him eating a lot of overpriced food and overpriced beer. So be on the lookout for that. That's just a little teaser of what's to come. But hey, I appreciate each and every one of you. Like I said, enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll be back. Actually, I think we'll be back before then. We'll probably be back with Marler for an SEC Power Ranking show on Sunday. But until then, that's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate each and every one of you. We'll catch you on the next one. All right, back on the show, the man, the myth, the legend, Clark Brooks, better known as SEC Stat Cat. He's On Three college football analyst. Clark, it's been too long, man. How you been?
I've been doing good, Mike, except for the fact my alma mater all of a sudden just cannot stop the basketball from going into the opponent's hoop. I'm pulling my hair out. Of course, losers of 4 or 5, and just right now tracking to be the worst defense in program history, according to the KenPom deficiency metric rating. So, yeah, happy Wednesday to you, my friend.
For those who don't know, he's talking about Kentucky, obviously, but and the one win they got was at Tennessee, which is like an impossible place to win. That's SEC basketball this year. It's completely nonsensical. This is my first year kind of going on a deep dive, and I can't figure out who's going to win day by day.
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, like, one of my favorite 30 for 30s is the old one on the Big East, where they just said, like, it was a slobber knocker every single week back in the mid-80s. Well, that's what the SEC is now. Every single week. You know, UK is going to have a sub-500 conference record and yet have, like, the second most wins against top 15 opponents. So it's just bananas, bonkers. You know, it's must-watch entertainment. Anyone can win. Everyone's talented. It's going to make for a really fun March when we get there. But, you know, I think we're here to talk a little bit about football. Our first loves, Mike. As much as basketball's in the air, we got to talk football, right?
Right, but hey, before we get to that, we're starting at a low. I want to get to hopefully a high, because I saw you tweet this.
Okay.
You've never watched Groundhog's Day until recently. Did you watch it? Can we get a quick review?
Quick review. I not only watched it, I also listened to the DVD commentary right afterwards. I'm those types of people. Once I consume something, I like to learn everything about it. So, yes, it met expectations. You know, I'm a person that loves comedies. You know, you don't have to tell me. Basically, anything from 1974 on, there's a good chance I've probably seen if it makes you laugh. So, big Bill Murray fan, big Harold Ramis fan, of course, getting them together for a good pairing. It really made, you know, it really was much more sentimental. You know, of course, I watched Palm Springs, its spiritual predecessor, during the pandemic. So, I had seen those type of time loop comedies. I thought that was a little bit more, you know, morally driven, as opposed to this one's like, okay, it's based off the stages of grief, I heard Harold Ramis say. So it had a natural story progression. And of course, it was about Bill. It wasn't about the two people in Palm Springs. So I liked it. I laughed out loud. I just kept laughing at the part where he keeps getting accosted by the annoying ass salesman, how he kept stepping into the pond or into the puddle right off the sailboat. And so very, very nice. I thought Annie McDowell was nice. Eye candy kept me interested in to see why, like, he wouldn't like to change his whole behavior based on just her genial approach, her amiability, just how she was just a really good soul and how he seemed to catch her eye being, you know, that nasty snot as it was in the beginning. So overall, I would say an A- on the Clark Brooks scale. Rewatchability is high. Jokes are high. Of course, the staying power is high. So I would say it was a very, very positive review at the end of the day.
Yeah, not to sound too old, but I guess I'm just old now. They just don't make them like they used to. You know what?
No, I mean, gosh bless. It's been maybe 8 to 10 years since a great blockbuster comedy that has brought everyone together. I don't know about you, But let's just say the movie like Hangover. I can tell you everything about it the first time I saw it. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. I can remember who I went with, where I was, what theater, whatever, everything. It just stuck with me. It was one of those types of just, I wouldn't say coming of age moments, but you just had to be there. That is just missing in the streaming age. And I don't know if that can ever come back. But yeah, I'm really thirsty for the next great blockbuster comedy if it ever does come around.
Well, yeah. All right. So let's transition. The next big blockbuster on the football field, biggest transfers. Everybody gets over the moon. We landed this guy. Who the hell cares? The guys we lost. Addition by subtraction. Those were locker room
Always,
cancers.
always, yeah.
We didn't want them. People overpaying for them. So anyone stand out to you? I know you're charting all this for On3 right now. Maybe the highest profile transfers that are gonna make the biggest impact in the SEC, incoming to the SEC, obviously, next year in 2025.
Well, within the SEC, some of our highest impact transfers are mostly wide receivers. So, like Kevin Concepcion, he's the one that's driving a lot of the conversation. He kind of underwhelmed based on North Carolina State's quarterback situation. Of course, that's really reliant on how a receiver can impact. If you can't get the ball in advantageous situations, it's not going to be so great. But he stands to be a really good guy after the catch. This is an offense, that really does like to orchestrate one-on-one matchups. And if you can get the ball in space where you're outside of a crowd, he is someone who can do damage. Someone else, Nick Anderson, we just talked about, coming from a very underwhelming quarterback situation, a very stinky offensive, such an offensive offense, if you will, Mike. But from going from Oklahoma, but going to being paired with Garrett Nussmeier alongside Barron Brown. So you can kind of get the trend, right? A lot of these receivers are kind of leaving situations where they maybe were not in the best spots to maximize their potential. So they're going to be paired with quarterbacks that they like to have a more more of a symbiote with. So here you got Barron Brown. We know he's a speed threat. He has one of the highest volume returns in terms of kickoff returns in SEC history. He's a very game-changing type of speed, type of receiver. He doesn't always do well through contact. He's definitely a DeSean Jackson mold type of guy, which we know that is a high type of ceiling. If you're someone like Garrett Nussmeier, who in the past has been a heat seeker. Of course, this past season, he kind of funneled towards the line of scrimmage a little bit more as opposed to throwing downfield a whole lot. But when you have someone like his speed paired with Chris Hilton, I really do think that's going to help elevate the offense, and it already is among the best in the conference. And then, we're going to just keep sticking with these new wide receivers, Kevin Coleman. So, Mike, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about Mississippi State last year. There just wasn't. The defense, you could tell in the spring ball, if basically everyone on their offense had a highlight reel that day, well, that was probably going to be a bad sign for that secondary. And that lived to be true. But hey, Kevin Coleman was a consistent shiner in that offense. Bringing along a new quarterback who sadly is no longer there. He's taking his talents to LSU to be a backup for a few years to marinate. But still, case be seen, Kevin Coleman was a game-changing receiver for them. The first few weeks of the season, he basically turned a 5 to 10 yard catch into an explosive touchdown. And of course, he had another few of those later in the season. But those are things that really do align with how Missouri used Luther Burden. We were talking in before we were rolling, but just how Missouri just had a little bit more of a disappointing year, and Luther Burden, because of how Brady Cook didn't necessarily take that step. His stats were a little bit muted in terms of like the volume stuff you would kind of expect from a wide receiver one or something like that. But when you're looking at stuff after the catch, him and Coleman's profiles are very close to each other. So I really do believe he can slide on in and have a really impactful fall for them. But this is a quarterback-driven league, and a lot of people are relying on getting new blood in there. Looking at Auburn, so Jackson Arnold. You don't have to do a whole lot of stat deep dives to realize that things fucking sucked last year in Norman. Dead last in average depth of target, dead last in percentage of throws beyond 10 yards downfield, and as a result, dead last in explosive pass rate and adjusted net passing yards per attempt. So he wasn't throwing the ball a whole lot into harm's way, and he did suffer from drops that cannot be ignored into this equation. But I do have a lot of reservations around Jackson Arnold and that just his overall ceiling as a passer. If you're just going to be an offensive executive taking what's there, I don't know how much your reputation is going to get you. Even though you are a mobile guy, avoiding mistakes is not worth nothing. It's just bottom line, we know how important explosive plays are in this conference. Since 2018, there's a higher correlation of covering and winning in the SEC if you win the explosive play battle. Not the middle eight, not the turnover battle, not rushing more for your opponent, winning explosive plays. So if he cannot give those explosive plays, the big thing that he has just been missing in Oklahoma, of course, they had a bevy of injuries that really did undercut him for sure. I already mentioned that drop rate. It's just, I haven't had a whole lot of esteem for Hugh Freeze offenses as of late. So the goal is if he can just be average. I think he can, but beyond that, I am just not so certain based on a whole lot of things that he just did not prove during last season.
Now, would you rather have, or I don't know the best way to frame this question, but maybe just who do you think is better positioned to have a better 2025? You just talked about Jackson Arnold, and 100% right. Offensive line was an issue. Offensive coordinator got fired in the middle of the year. Receivers were devastated. I truly don't think Oklahoma had a much of a game. They had some solid backs, but no true game breakers. So I don't even know how to evaluate Jackson Arnold based on all that. Would you rather have him stepping into a situation where Auburn's returning a lot on the offensive line? They have a very talented receiving core, but it at you know a lot of young players too there. But would you rather have Jackson Arnold, or would you rather have John Mateer, who's now replacing him, bring in the offensive coordinator, the continuity there? Who do you think is going to have a better 2025? Because I think this is going to be a back and forth question debated in Norman and Auburn all off season.
So Mateer was a swashbuckler. He clearly added things with his legs. He averaged about 8 yards per scramble on a 64% success rate against his hardest opponents. The big drawback with he's just a big play merchant, right? He's not necessarily the most consistent guy down to down, but he's just hunting for big plays. When things break down, he's just looking to extend and just play backyard ball a whole lot. He has a clear swashbuckling quality. Do not kid yourself. The big drawback with him is his throwing mechanics that has brought on some of this down-to-down inconsistency. He has a very poor base. He has a three-quarter release. It's a very clear gunslinger quality, but when you're just wanting to get down-to-down results, I'm not certain he's going to be the guy. That said, he has a much higher floor because he's able to erase sacks, extend, and offer added juice with his after contact ability compared to Jackson Arnold, who could see space, but not necessarily erase stuff, go through contact, get those hidden yards, and keep you ahead of the chains like Mateer can.
Yeah, okay.
Now,
How about this one? I know this is not just these fans, but all of college football seemingly is debating, who is better or who will be better in 2025, DJ Lagway or Lenora Sellers?
dude, this is the debate of the offseason. Any given day, I might flip-flop, right?
Right.
So Lenora Sellers, I just filled in his impact stuff last night just so I wanted to have the top quarterbacks all in a row so I could look at them. He has the top depth-adjusted accuracy in our sample. So as you might have heard me say before on previous podcasts or on Twitter, depth-adjusted accuracy applies more risk reward the further a pass travels beyond the line of scrimmage, right? If you're accurate downfield, you're gonna come out shining. If you're inaccurate downfield, well, it's just gonna come out a little chewy, a little poopy. He has the top mark so far of the top quarterbacks. He's really good beyond 10 yards downfield. He's prudent. He does not throw the ball into harm's way. The main drawback, even though he's a fantastic backyard baller, is just takes a little bit too much sacks. Of course, at the end of the day, that is a quarterback sack. Even if he's pressured very heavily from South Carolina's line, it is better. It finally, after the fourth year of Shane Beamer, they finally improved their pressure rate from worsening, which was the case the three prior years had worsened each year. They finally turned the corner and have started to provide a little bit more cushion for their passers, but it just takes way too many sacks. But then when you look at the young gun, DJ Lagway, he has the top deep accuracy in the SEC as a true freshman. You know, Florida had their own worst this past season, yet you could not help but not pay attention to that young man. So, like, yeah, any given day, I might flip-flop on who I like best because I just love downfield throwers, accurate downfield throwers, and both of these guys in their own way are certainly premium in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about two other guys that came into college the same time, both rated as five stars, both rated as the face of the franchise, if you will. And, of course, I'm talking Arch Manning at Texas, getting all the hype, and Nico,
Yeah.
who a lot of people I don't get the Nico conversation. I really don't. People think – not everyone, but a lot of people think he sucks. He's overrated, I think, because he came in with all this hype. And last I checked, Clark, he just took a team to the college football playoff, which only 12 quarterbacks did. And he's a young guy going into year two, so he's got more experience at the college level than Arch. But, you know, what are the pros and cons of that battle, Arch versus Nico?
Well, Nico also had a top three defense. Let's not, you know, forget that. Like that was a big deal in, you know, Tennessee making the playoff, in my opinion. But
that's because they got to practice against Nico.
I'm sure. But I mean, no, Nico is talented. He's like his darts over the middle made Josh Heupel tweak his scheme to suit his skill set. It seems we have seen enough Josh Heupel where he tends to like his vertical choice stuff. His inside gap scheme run stuff. He doesn't like to get quarterbacks on the move. Well, we saw all last year he tinkered with that across the season to help his young quarterback come along. So the big drawback, of course, is the splash games. He was hardly on the same page with his receivers deep. Deep uncatchable pass rate was just awful. There's just no way getting around it. I mean, it really did overshadow those mid-range darts. So even though, he is mobile, he has the size. It's just that scheme in general, it hinders how someone can develop as a passer. Of course, Arch Manning has been marinating for a few seasons. He, unlike Josh Heupel, which is a little bit more, I would say, more of a matched up post-snap, let's read what they're doing to us and then react type of a scheme as opposed to Sark's play calling, which is more, okay, we're going to run this. We're going to make them think we're going to run this. Then we're going to run that. It's much more of a pre-snap orchestration of things. You know, it's a very high motion type of offense. It's an offense that really likes deception. And I really do think that Arch Manning is going to be the real deal. I really do. Yes. When he played this past season, he played against a very easy slate. Yes, this past season, he was an offensive executive with nearly 70% of his attempts coming off of a screen, an RPO, or a true dropback play action pass. Super high percentage. But I, same time, see the traits that help him stand out. He's got that natural release. He seems to be cerebral in the approach. Yes. Went under the gun sometimes last year on these later down plays. He always didn't necessarily have the best, you know, awareness about him. He's got to get some more game reps. He's got to stand in there under the fire, under the bullets, you know, and really prove he is the real deal. But I just think, seeing from what I've seen on tape, I think he's going to have a more impactful season because I think Texas is further, a little bit further along than Tennessee on offense. I do believe he's going to be put in situations to succeed and where he's not necessarily going to have to do a whole lot of heavy lifting. Because when we think about Tennessee's scheme, there's hardly ever any built-in checkdowns. So when a play breaks down, it's just Nico in the pocket. There's just nowhere to go with the freaking football. There has been a consistent theme in Tennessee's quarterbacks having a terrible pressure-to-sack ratio because of that. Even though Hendon Hooker is a very next-level athlete, even though Joe Milton is a very next-level athlete, even though Nico is a next-level athlete, that has been a consistent boo-boo in the scheme. So I just think the environment, how they're put in situations to succeed, I think Arch Manning is just going to have a little bit more of an impactful fall. Even though I do believe Nico has one of those premium arm talents in the game, I do believe he's going to, you know, he's not going to be the one of the worst passers in the SEC for the second straight year targeting deep. That's not going to happen. Just bring that down to just being average. But at the same time, I just think Manning just does it for me. What can I say?
You're one of those. I get it. One of those. I know this is more opinion based, but this is also one of my favorite offseason questions that we hit on all last year. And I think it's going into the upcoming year still rings true. I mean, I think you go either way, and I don't think there's a wrong answer here. Who do you think is a better coach, Shane Beamer or Eli Drinkwitz?
I think Eli Drinkwitz is the better coach. I think Shane Beamer has been lucky. He's been winning some in the margins. He's like I mentioned earlier, he's been defying some things that basically tell you, oh, you're in trouble here. But Beamer, the thing is, I think he got more impactful players, and that's not worth nothing. I mean, talent evaluation is basically 80% of the job, from the people you hire, from the eye you have for talent, to your ability to secure that talent, to make sure that no, what you thought was real is, spectacular. So they have hit on a lot of young gems, to the fact that I think Missouri has not necessarily had that success yet. Of course, Sellers being that next level type of talent at quarterback changes the game completely. Of course, it's an entirely more impactful position. So it might just be circumstantial in terms of the short term, because I think Eli has been able to do more with less. Not to say, obviously Luther Burden's a next level talent, but he turned Cody Schrader into an All-American. No one knew who he was. They've been able to hit on a lot of their under-heralded transfer portal additions, to where, they've never necessarily had a weak spot up front at his regime. And that's all considering his defenses have been kind of hit and miss. So with that instability on the other side of the ball, and yet being able to basically pull Missouri out of the mediocrity that can, doom a lot of teams in this conference and making them title contenders, I think that says a whole lot based on his track record rather than just a one good, optimistic turnaround season like South Carolina had last fall.
Yeah, all right. Well, same question, but two different coaches and two very different coaches. They, from what I understand, they I'm trying to put this nicely. I was going to say despise each other. I think that's a little too harsh, but it's close. Lane Kiffin or Brian Kelly? Who do you think's a better coach?
Man, that is a really tough question, because again, it comes down to just the type of guy you want. Of course, Lane is a little bit more modern. Brian Kelly is a walking, cringing meme. I do think, because he's younger, and I do think, like, I think he's going to win a national championship before it's said and done. I have a lot less faith in Brian Kelly. I've seen Brian Kelly biff good rosters. I've seen Brian Kelly have consistent roster building issues. And again, his stance on NIL kind of remains a little bit antiquated. He might say he's all in, or we don't want to have that type of person who's just pacing, chasing a paycheck to play here or whatever. Well, we just saw Ole Miss put together, a top five defense, and, they were, let's just say, three snaps away from making the college football playoff. Like, they were just right there. I mean, based on who you asked, they should have made it or not. They had a roster that was as good, I think, as SMU or any of those teams, Indiana, any of those teams that barely squeaked in there. So I think just because of how, at a place like Ole Miss that really hasn't won anywhere, even though, yeah, the big knock on Lane is like, who is he beating? What are his best wins ever? I think he's just getting started, to be honest with you. And I just think the best days of Brian Kelly might be past. Of course, he's a very, I would say, popular name to put on as like a hot seat list for being a dark horse, to get fired this fall if he doesn't necessarily mesh with this team. Bringing back Nussmeier and reloading with all these receivers, that's a clear message of we want to, consistently win now mode. Of course, that's what you have to be if you're a college football blue blood these days. But I just think if they're two were playing each other, rosters were equal, I would think Lane Kiffin's squad would maybe have a little bit more tricks up their sleeve, have a little bit more of an aggression to how they play the ball than Brian Kelly, who's a little bit more passive and wait and see, and let's see how the ball bounces here in the late first quarter based on how we do things based over the course of his career. Now, he has gotten a little bit more aggressive, but yeah, end of the day, I'm going to roll with Lane Kiffin over Brian Kelly.
Well, speaking of hot seat, what's the future of Mark Stoops? Where I like to call it the Great Kentucky Mexican Standoff, because he's got this massive buyout. He's on record. I'm not walking away from that buyout. And Mitch Barnhart, we all know. Well, those that do know, he is not interested in paying a dime for a coaching buyout. See John Calipari. So, what do you think is the future there for Mark Stoops? Can he turn this thing around, or what? It seems bleak right now.
Depending on who you ask, Kentucky's win totals between 4 and 6. I would think. I am on the low end. It's not a knock against Cutter Bowley, who I think has high-end potential. It's not a knock against Jamarion Wilcox, who I think has high-end potential, who's standing to be Kentucky's young starting backfield. The whole offensive line is going to be all to, except for one possession. They're all going to be from different spots. So that's, we just saw Oklahoma do this stuff last year, right? That didn't work out well. Once the starting center went down, they just could not recover. So depth still remains to be an issue up front for UK, even though I do think Bear today, that is one position group that I think is better than this time last year. You can't say that for a whole lot of other things in the roster. It's not interior defensive line with Deion Walker gone. It's not linebacker with the transfers and Jamon Dumont-Donchan gone and Derrick Jackson gone, who are both going to the NFL draft. Cornerback is not better with Maxwell Harrison gone. Receiver's not better with Dane Key and Baron Brown, who we mentioned earlier, gone. So yeah, it's hard to develop optimism when you know the schedule, which was one of the hardest in college football last year, is going to maintain itself again in 2025. So it's really hard to drum up optimism. Of course, you mentioned that buyout, it's too lofty. Fans, because of the Coach Calipari situation, has conditioned them to accept that no matter how salty, no matter how checked out they are. But I would say this is in dangerous situations. I wouldn't say being in Joker Phillips territory where he's losing to Vanderbilt at home by like 40 to nothing or whatever, and there's like 10 people there. But I think if it's going to be a rocky start in this hard schedule, it'll be really hard to see a path where the two either don't mutually part ways or something's going to be done in terms of, some negotiations because Stoops has maintained that there's going to be a better team. I don't see it right now. I think their linebackers, I think their pass rush, I think their receivers at large are just not up to SEC quality. And again, if you're just bringing along a very green passer, no matter how talented you think you are, we mentioned some other examples in this conference, in this call, it's just not going to be a great product in the short term in this conference. And when you have someone like Bush Hamden who oversaw someone who, was in the Heisman contention last year, Nashon Jeantie, and Talen Green, who had major leaps and bounds growth as a passer, leaving him, it says a lot. Again, when you isolate Kentucky's offense down there with Oklahoma in terms of passing production, passing proficiency, in terms of power five stuff, they were in the bottom five. So it's really hard sell at this point in time for that pass game. So end of the day, it's just going to be on Stoops, and it's going to be really hard to talk yourself out of this one if it's going to hit expectations like I think it's going to.
Yeah. Hey, last thing for you, Clark. Really appreciate your time. Who do you think's on the hottest seat in the SEC? And maybe even if it is Stoops, which I don't think it is, but someone else if you believe it's Stoops.
It might be Brian Kelly. Sam Pittman, I think the fans want more there. Of course, they lost a lot of quality transfers this offseason. Of course, retaining Green isn't worth nothing, but all their quality offensive linemen left, and that's gonna be a really tough thing for Sam Pittman, who specializes in that department. So I think he's definitely one. Of course, Napier is the obvious one. He got that vote of confidence in the middle of next season. So Florida, it looks like Kentucky, their schedule is going to be really hard again. So even if DJ Lagway improves and progresses, and if this team goes 7-5 or 6-6, is that enough to, keep him around? I'm not so sure, Mike. I'm not so sure. I think Shane Beamer, saved his job because of the way he's recruiting, even though, if he goes 6-6 again, I don't think he would necessarily be pleasing a whole lot of people, but I think he bought himself at least 2 more years there. But yeah, I would say Pittman, Napier, and if that somehow that contract buyout gets brought down, maybe Mark Stoops.
All right, Clark. Always a treat to talk to you, my friend. Before you go, can you tell my audience how to follow you, how to find your work?
Absolutely. The site is still under some construction, so there's a little bit of pause of some content creation, but the stats still work. The filters still work. So I would invite you to check out secstatcat.com, where you can find past charts, concepts broke out from each team in the conference, advanced statisticals with stat tables. So it's all right there in front of you. So you can measure who are the top returners in the conference. You can find some nitty-gritty things that could maybe point you into some silver linings for next season in terms of returners. And of course, I am also a part of the On3 team, where we are updating our transfer portal and 2025 player impact rankings daily ahead of the season. As we find new information, we're going to update that in real time. So check that out at on3.com. You can go to the transfer portal stuff or find your individual teams fan page. We're really good about building up a community, talking on those message boards and all that good stuff. So of course, you can follow me on X. It's not as active as I used to be, but I still like to, that's my main outlet to a lot of people. So that is at SEC_StatCat there.
You got to step up your troll game. It was at an elite level
it
there for
was.
A while. You got to get
it
back.
Was. I was thinking about this the other day, like how freaking chesty I used to be calling out people. I don't know if I need to get back to that or not, just because now over the years, a lot more player personnel people follow me, coaches follow me, so it's just having a little bit more decorum, not necessarily making On3 look bad, but yeah, I do miss the days being chesty, calling out people and saying you're a freaking you know what, because looking at some of these quarterback rankings that were coming back and had some labeled the Clemson quarterback the top returner just based on one half, forgetting the other half, a little too much for me. It's a little too rich for me, but I'm gonna bite my tongue, because again, it's spring. Spring is approaching, so now's the time to get your bad text out. Now's the time to let it breathe, and rethink things, and just see how things are reactive in the air here.
All right, thanks, buddy. I really appreciate you.
Nope.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.